Welcome back to another episode of Suburban Sprawlcast, and man, is this a good one. We celebrate 50 years of Jerry O'Neill. Now, Jerry is a drummer from Riverside, California, who has played with Dead Sparrows, who's currently playing with Emily and the Blackouts, who do have an album coming out that we talk about later on in the episode. I've seen him with Ukulele Hero, but he's most notoriously known for drumming for Voodoo Glow Skulls for over 10 years. This guy is a genuinely good person and so fascinating to talk to. We talked for over 2 hours, so it was really hard to edit this down to an hour because he had so many great things to say that I found so inspiring as a musician. So please sit back, enjoy, and listen to Jerry and I shoot the shit about what it's like to play in a band like Voodoo Glow Skulls. We're recording now.
Recording.
Yeah.
Thanks, church lady.
Welcome back to Suburban Sprawlcast. I've got Jerry O'Neill with me.
We're doing it in Joshua Tree.
Joshua Tree, California. And I can't even thank you enough for letting me come up here because this is such a breath of fresh air, literally.
Yeah.
Like, it's so quiet.
Yeah. A little too quiet. It was hard to get used to at first, but.
Oh, I bet it was.
But if I live part-time in Riverside, so, if I want a dose of big city life of Riverside.
right. It's not too far away.
It's funny. It's like Riverside used to be the opposite, you know?
Right.
It's a little developed now, sort of.
It is.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. It's a little bit of a drive to L.A., but I wouldn't want to go to L.A. if I lived up here.
Yeah. I was born in L.A., actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was born at the California Hospital, 1969. December 1st, 1969, which is coming up on my 50th.
Holy cow.
Yeah, which I'm excited about because there's a lot of cool stuff that happened 50 years ago, you know.
A lot of
memorable events. So.
And how long of that have you been doing music in that 50 years?
Since I was 15?
Yeah.
I'd say about 30 plus years.
Did you start by playing the drums?
Yeah. Drums. I wasn't natural ability or anything. I basically met Voodoo Glow Skulls when I was very, very young, which weren't the Voodoo Glow Skulls, just neighborhood kids. Yeah. And it was you pick an instrument, and that's what you played. And then we practiced six hours a day for like 6 months until you learned our instruments. Total Garage Band. Yeah.
Did you guys have a band name before?
No, it was just, you know.
Just got together to jam.
Yeah, covers. I think our first cover was Maiden. It was a Maiden cover. It was Run of the Hills. Yeah, I believe. Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it sounded like it at all, but, you know, but we're learning on that song, you know.
Of course. That's a hard song to learn on. Yeah. I mean, that is amazing.
Yeah, so, so that's how we learned. That's how I learned my instrument, through just practice. No natural abilities at all.
When did you guys decide that, you know what, we're a band, we got to have a band name now?
That's a good one, actually. My family moved out here in Riverside in about 86. And I met Casillas brothers, Frank, Eddie, and George, as neighborhood kids. Not playing instruments yet, which we eventually started playing, just because we were interested in music. Back then, it was either sports or music, you know. You follow what you dig,
right?
And this is pre Voodoo, so we learned how to play our instruments by just sheer love of music, you know. We learned our instruments, and then we just didn't really. We didn't go forward much more with what we were doing besides the covers. So we got a little older, started meeting other cats in the neighborhood. And me and Eddie branched out and started, I think it was a band called Say What You Will, which is, I think, a Fastway song. Mm-hmm. And Fastway went on to become Dave, the singer of Fastway, is Flogging Molly.
Yeah.
So that name came from back then because we were a fan of metal music. You know, metal was a... It was before punk rock or ska or anything like that. And we just practiced. And then, we learned some Maiden songs. Maiden branched out and started back called Say You Will. I think we did a Cult cover, which we played twice in the set because it was so good, you know. and a couple originals. And, you know, we were like, hey, there's two more brothers laying around, you know? Right. Let's ask George, play bass, and Frank sing. So, yeah, George learned the bass, and Frank became a vocalist. And another 3 years passed of practicing and making original songs and doing a couple covers. I think one of our first covers was my own Private Idaho by B-52s, and I sang the backups on it, you know?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Goofy shit like that.
Yeah,
we just practiced a couple years, and, you know, we needed to think of a name, and we got the name from our friend JR, which was us hanging out in his Volkswagen van, and he had a little necklace that he had stolen from Disneyland the day before called Voodoo Glow Skull. So it wasn't really made up. It was a Disneyland novelty from the Adams Company, the Adams Novelty Company. Called Voodoo Glow Skull, and we just added Voodoo Glow Skulls.
That's all. I did not know that.
Yeah. So it came from Disneyland. So yeah, we wanted to name it something, you know, kind of we wanted to name it something kind of you know, just kind of metal-y, just metal sounding, you know, kind of, you know, heavy sounding.
Yeah.
But and it didn't end up being that way. It kind of, if you, Voodoo Glow Skull sounds kind of, you know, sounds kind of, you know, just. It matched the music eventually, I think. You know, the really, nuttiness of it. You know?
It's a very distinct sound when I hear...
That wasn't the intention at first with the name or anything like that, you know, in the style. So,
right.
And I think it just kind of, you know, it kind of... It made sense after a while, and it fit together good. So, you know, that's the starting of it. That's the starting of us, you know, pre-recording, you know.
Do you remember when you guys made the decision that you needed to add horns to your band?
Yeah, we were just a four piece. In the bedroom, a garage band, but practicing in Eddie's parents, Eddie's parents' bedroom. So
really,
yeah. So that was us. You know, for 3 years. No, actually, it was like 2 years before we added the horns. Why not? You know, I think, the first ska punk band that, okay, prior to Operation Ivy, we were listening to Fishbone and, you know, stuff like that, Madness and stuff like that. At the same time, listening to punk and metal and all that. But our first to really go forward with it and really pay attention to ska punk was Operation Ivy. And then, we're like, okay, let's add horns because there's ska and horns, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, there's horns and ska, you know,
right.
Boston's were doing it, and we actually had our friend a roadie learn trumpet, and he was a little dance guy too, you know what I mean? So yeah, but we didn't do that long until we found our own little niche, our style.
Was it hard to find people that played horns?
No, because they weren't. They were just people that kind of knew how to play, maybe playing a couple years or, you know,
right.
Our trombone player, Brody Johnson, he didn't know how to, I think he played a little bit, maybe played a couple months, but he didn't really know how to play. You know, he revealed to us later that he didn't know how to play really, you know, and that he was just cool, you know? So we just practiced with him again, practicing until somebody learns a fucking instrument.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And that's all it was, you know. So, you know, I mean, what do you do? I mean, it's just this certain style of music you're making, and you know, you got to pull any horn player for the most part. I think, you know, that's willing to try and practice and figure it out. And that's when Joe McNally and Helios Joey Hernandez came to the picture, first horn players.
That should be really, I mean, you hit some amazing points right there. That is like any kid that is just starting an instrument right now, you could start a band.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
Like you, there's no, well, when I get better, I want to start a band. If you're playing an instrument and you know three notes.
Yeah.
Start that band.
Start the band and practice it.
And practice it over and over.
And that's all, like I said, if without natural ability, that's what you got to do. Hey, you know how it is. Like there's cats that are killer out of the box. You know.
Yep. Yeah.
And I always hated that because like fucking it took me so much work. Right.
I know it. I still experience that, and I'm 35 years old. Like, yeah. Man, I wish I had my shit together a long time ago.
Yeah, I feel like such a hack. You know.
Right. Yeah.
It's in a good way because I made my own sound. You know.
Right.
It,
you absolutely.
I didn't go to school for it. It was my own translation of what I thought, you know. So it's a bit hacky what I do, but I think in the end it's kind of what develops styles, you know. So because you're not reinventing the wheel, you know. You're always trying to, you know, but you know, and maybe in some cases we did. I think.
Yeah. Oh, like I don't know that I've ever heard any ska band. Or let alone even a punk band, you take away the horns like Voodoo Glow Skulls. It's a very defined sound. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, just practicing over and over again, you find your own niche. Like you don't necessarily have to go by the book. That's what's great about music.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
Of course, like learn as much music theory as possible now because it'll save you a lot of time in the end. But
yeah,
like you would play three notes, you could start a band. Mm-hmm. And just practice.
For sure. And a lot of the sound that Voodoo Glow Skulls developed is, a lot of it, if you listen to it, it's pretty minor. Everything's like kind of a little dark sounding, not too happy sounding, yep. You know? I think, I know, it's not that we're like depressed kids. I think a lot of the original members just didn't like anything cheesy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it did kill us a couple times, but saved us, you know, like when we should have been writing that hit record, you know, that right when ska was booming, we could have wrote some poppy songs and maybe got on the radio, made some more money or whatever. But I think I think our cult following wouldn't have been there for, you know, right, all those years because we made decisions like that, you know.
And I think they're still making those decisions. I mean, even in the later albums, I know that you haven't been in for a while, but
it's been 10 years now. I'm actually on the last half of the last recording.
Oh yeah.
It's been a while since Voodoo's come out on the record, but there's a batch of songs that are really good. It's the same style though,
right?
So which exactly. I'm so happy that
you can only mature as musicians and mm-hmm. And you just try different things, and that's what I hear in the later records too. But it's still that distinct Voodoo Glow Skull sound.
A lot have to do with being a band longer, you know, around a little longer, you know, touring more, writing songs, writing a new batch of songs other than the first band, the songs that you started with, was kind of a challenge too.
Mm-hmm.
You know. These are new songs, or, you know, then there's pressure now. All of a sudden, you're on a label, you know. I mean, it's your own pressure. There really is no pressure, you know. You have this luxury of being on the label now, write the songs, you know.
Yeah.
Which still came out natural. It always has come out natural, and the way we wanted it to sound. But you know, it's ever evolving, you know. And you know, and I hope to do a couple shows in the future.
What was there a moment where you were able to just sit back and think, like, things are different? Like, we're actually making it. Like, this is something people really are enjoying. Was there, like, a show or?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. No.
A series of shows?
You know, like I was talking to before we started here, you know, the band's the band was super. It's always been DIY.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, we cut our teeth with Maximum Rock and Roll, way of doing things. You know, book your own fucking life type thing. You know.
Right.
Eddie, guitar player at a record store, Cheap Guy Records, and which was our home base for selling records, keeping in contact with other bands, and networking, if you will. And that's how we are cut our teeth with that. So, we're playing. It's the thing with Voodoo. It got pretty popular pretty quick, actually, after going on the road. You know, I mean, we ate shit for a lot of years. in the beginning. I mean, when I say eat shit, I mean, everybody crammed in the van without a trailer, you know? Yeah. The trailer was luxury, you know? You know? Right. And we're doing that. We're doing
it. With how many guys at that point?
It was seven guys and one.
And all their equipment.
Guy. Yeah, and all the equipment.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. No trailer. You know, I mean, who would have. I mean, nobody had the idea. Let's get a trailer, you know, or they couldn't afford it. I think our first trailer was, I wish we had a picture of it. It was pretty, pretty ridiculous, but, you know, it made it across the country. And, yeah, so, you know, we started touring early on, but, you know, 2 weeks at a time, a month at a time, and then it got more as your following starts getting, you know, bigger. And, you know, it probably was a little easier through the whole DIY thing, because we were playing anything, playing parties, basements, shithole clubs, you know, all of this, you know, which I would still love to play, you know. I tour with a new band eventually, you know, and do little stuff like that, you know.
So yeah, so because of that network, we the band got popular pretty quick, you know. Mm-hmm. started getting more than 20 people in Texas, more than 30 people in Chicago, you know. To we're playing like bigger small venue shows, you know. Just, you know, for me, I was always happy playing you know, the shitholes, but packing them in. The country is filled with all these places, really? You know, and everybody that in our genre and punk and metal or whatever, we're playing them. You know, some got big, some, you know, went into obscurity and kept on going. And but there's loads of those places that I love, man. I love just packing them in, as you know, because in the beginning we were packing it in, so it was luxury for people for it to sell out, you know, whatever, you know,
whatever the
capacity, the size of a house or whatever it was, whatever, wherever we played, they were packed. We started playing with bigger bands, and you know, like Screeching Weasel and you know, stuff like that, and you know, we'd get random shows like that, and that was awesome, because there's, you know, twice as many people there. So. And the cool thing about Voodoo is we were never coattail riders. We didn't really gain popularity through only doing big shows, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, we played anywhere, anytime. So I think the hard work paid off, really. That's how we were able to, like, you know, just it'd be just us, you know, headlining. But our first big tour was the basement shows and the house parties and all that, wherever we can play. our first big tours with the Boston's, Mighty Boston's. Cool. Took us out for 5 weeks.
What do you remember what year that would have been?
That was 94.
That's like Boston's peak.
Peak, yeah, that, yeah, that's well, that was right before that rise. Was that was right the before rise. The radio,
but single still out. That yeah. I mean, they were pretty huge back then.
They were, see, so that was that's here entered phase three. We're playing theaters, sold out theaters, and bigger clubs, you know, you know, like, okay, so we're on this tour, this is awesome, we don't know anything about stuff like this, you know. What's a writer? You know, what's this, you know, what's it like? There's a lighting guy, there's a sound guy that comes, you know, there's a band, you know, the band with Boston's, were touring with a light guy, a sound guy, guitar tech, drum tech, merchandise guy. Yeah, what's a, you know, this is all new to us, you know. Mm-hmm. And Boston's showed us that way of touring, you know. You know, here, you know, we're playing tonight, there's ticket sales, there's a banner behind us, and we're, you know, we have a backstage, you know, which is, you know, a luxury also. So
yeah.
But you're not used to this, and it's a little weird, you know, when you grow up playing in the bedroom, and then playing all these shitholes, and you know, and being in that whole maximum rock and roll thing, you know, and kind of staying within the margin of maximum rock and roll, you know, like, you know, with the PC thing and all that, you know, just, you know, right. You don't want to be hating that scene. You can't say certain things or, you know, act a certain way, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which kind of broke out of, not because we hated it or anything like that. It's just, you know, a band starts getting, you know, a little bit bigger, it gets signed. That's what happens, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's when you lose that DIY crowd, you know, but because we made
certain decisions, we kind of we kept a lot of them, and that's, you know, that's where we got the cult following. You know, there was no, you know, the band. We had singles. Okay, we had singles that were pushed through the label through Epitaph. You know, we had a couple singles on the radio. Mm-hmm. You know, but they weren't radio friendly. You know. You know, and you know, it was pretty popular for a while. We stayed on the radio for a little bit. And
that says more about the radio than it does the Voodoo Glow School. So
right, no, I know. But when you ask me if when you feel like you made it, you're like, you know, like in history, when you first hear yourself on the radio, you know, if you watch whatever, you know, movie about some 50s band that makes it on the radio, or you know, whatever, you know, and they're so excited about it, we're on the fucking radio, you know,
right.
So you get a sense of that, but you're like, oh shit, this is like, okay, you know, we got signed, we're on the radio, but I still feel like this DIY kid, you know,
yeah, right,
you know,
right, right, right,
you know, and it's like, you're not used to it. And it's a little weird to you. For me, you know,
nothing changed.
Yeah, nothing changed. And it's just, you're like, fuck, man, I don't really dig this big theater of playing. It's nice and it's cool, but it's big and the stage is big and all my bandmates are further away from me now. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So the thing is, but we'd always play whatever big place, we'd always play together. You know what I mean? I wouldn't even use a drum. I wouldn't use a drumizer most of the time. You know, I request that, which a lot of local venues hate it. You know, take it out of there. You know, but you know, we're the headliner, so
right.
I want to play on the floor and I want to play next to my friends, like we're playing in the fucking bedroom. You know, and so we play in these places, and you know, that's what I was used to. So it was really hard for me to play at bigger places and, you know, and kind of own it for the most part, because I just, you know, you're like, fuck, this is a big place, you know. And I would get so tired because I felt like I had to play for the big ass room, you know. So I played fucking so hard, you know, and it was just, it was hard to play a long set because of that, you know. So every night was fucking tiring, you know, super tiring, on top of the 500 mile drive that you just did, or you're gonna do, you know. So
right.
But you get used to that. That's okay, so training, then you get used to it, then you love it, and you're like, oh man, this is the shit, you know. I got a drum monitor, you know. Now all of a sudden I'm bitchy about my drum sound, I mean my monitor, you know.
Right.
And then you turn to that asshole, kind of, you know. And humbly speaking, you know.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
can I get more hi-hats?
I became that monster, you know. But then, you know, then you get really kind of really pro, and you're playing anywhere, anytime. Let's play, fuck the sound, we're playing this big place, and it became really easy.
Yeah.
You know, and you love playing these big places,
of course,
you know? And then, so I mean, I'm talking, we're playing theaters, you know, or big clubs, you know.
Like the
palaces of the world, you know, the which was the Avalon, places like that, you know.
I remember
Palladium, stuff like that. So
Palace is a gorgeous venue. I can only imagine the others that
We did two sold out nights, now nights there, on our own, handful of opening shows, memorable ones, really cool bands. Quasar was one of them. Quasar was the Beastie Boys, pretty much.
Yeah.
We did a show with Sick of It All on them, and we killed it that night. We were the best band that night. We were just one of those nights I remember that we killed it. I mean, I'm not going to say best bands compared to like Beastie Boys or something like that, but
and
Sick of It All for that matter, which are kings of live, but we just had it that night. You know, we had a crowd and we killed it. So that was a memorable night. So yeah, we're playing these big places across the country. Played the Palladium about four times, you know, and like, fuck, we're good on this. Let's keep it going, you know. And then you start playing festivals. Enter the festivals. See, there's all these phases of bands, you know, like start in the bedroom, it goes up, you know. So you know, you come, you max out, or you become a lifer, you know. Unfortunately, didn't become a lifer, but it's still in me. And
not with the Glow Skulls, but I would say that you're a lifer in music.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, for sure.
I still
eat shit because of it. You know, I stopped playing so I haven't been in Voodoo for 10 years, and I stopped playing for 5 years completely.
Wow.
Completely. I was just, you know, I was burned out.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I was burned out. I didn't want to see. You know, I was drinking all night, sleeping all day for the last part 5 years of Voodoo Glow Skulls. I didn't want to be there. I just, you know, and it's hard to break loose with a band that you've that you grew up playing with. You know, it's gnarlier than a marriage.
Yeah.
You know, I got divorced 10 years before I was no longer in voodoo. And, that was gnarlier, you know, that was 10 times gnarlier. So, I stopped playing for 5 years cause I was completely done. I was fried because I was depressed of being on the road, you know, cause like I said, we were on the road for a long time before that. So, you know, I was sleeping all day, just trying to erase my time on the road. Cause I was only having fun when I'm on stage. And then afterwards hanging out with friends and, you know, we made new towns and party all night and taking cabs and going on adventures, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of it was adventures. I just want to see the shit. I just want to see the lowbrow part of the world, you know, which I still do, which I kept on going when I'm a weirdo. I started driving a cab. I drove a cab for 8 years, you know. I like weird underground shit, you know. So I didn't do it. I didn't pick up nothing 5 years. Not even play a beat or anything. 5 years. I still play less, way less than I used to. But I didn't, 5 years I didn't touch it. And then, you know,
Were you promoting during those 5 years?
Yeah, thanks.
So I feel like you were still part of that, like making music happen.
For sure.
For whoever wants to make it, you know, that you find decent. Of
course. Yeah, I did promoting, I think 3 years into that hiatus, I started promoting at a local Riverside club. That started doing shows on Sundays. The place is called Pixels. A club over there I've known since skateboarding days, you know. And you know, he built the club. Let's see where it goes with him from there. You know, he's building a stage. You know, oh cool. There's gonna be bands playing then. You know, unfortunately. Bands don't pay the bill, so you got to do whatever you can to get people in there so you can keep it going, which is awesome because even if you know, even if you can only do one day a week or whatever, 2 days a week with live music, at least we got that, and you know, and a cool in a rad place. It's always free and it's cheap and it's
exactly, it's and awesome. That's like
So I never promoted, and that was my Warren, the owner, you know, we kind of brainstormed it a little bit. I kind of fell into it accidentally, I think. Yeah, and then I guess okay, this is what a promoter does, you know. It's like a promoter with no budget, you know, just a real local scene type thing, getting people in there, you know, getting that scene kind of going. And it started as Acoustic Sundays, you know.
That's right, I remember those. Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of snuck in a lot, you know, full piece bands, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, let's bring a punk band in. Okay, let's bring a ska band in. Okay, let's sound bring a system whatever band in. That's going to play that week, you know?
Right. You know, there are those weeks, too.
Yeah. There's a lot of those, but I got the opportunity to promote. And and that's, you know, I've never seen the other side of that. And it was fun. And then and I couldn't do it anymore.
Right. Absolutely. I can't imagine being a promoter, to be honest. It's so stressful.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Sunday night's a hard night to book.
Oh, imagine having to pay a band.
Yeah.
And then there's nobody there.
Feeling bad for not being able to pay the band when they're fucking kicking ass. Oh, you know?
Right. Like, yeah. No, I've heard horror stories. I've heard horror stories like in voodoo, we've had to walk a couple promoters to the ATM, you know, to pay the band. Hey, dude, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we drove 500 miles and, you know, and I'm sorry the show wasn't how you wanted it, but there's still a guarantee, and, you know, we need the money, you know, you might, because a lot of the times it wasn't, I mean, there's always different elements of why a show doesn't do well. It's a Monday, you know,
right.
You know, the band's not as popular in that town as in the other town, you know, the promoter just didn't do shit, you know.
Yeah.
You know, God. So, you know, we're on the contract, so, you know, pay us, you know, and a lot of times, not a lot of times, but sometimes we'd have to really chase our money, you know.
Mm. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know. So I understand the promoter thing. I really understand all Absolutely. That shit when Absolutely. I started doing promotions, you know.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was cool. So I got to see the other side of it, and it was easy for me because I know that life, you know. So when you think some bands super huge, you know, because you see them in L.A. and it's they could be going down the block and it's crickets, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody goes through it, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody goes through their practice Mondays shows, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But it's a good time to like kind of fine tune things, yeah. You know? Like,
oh, for sure.
The you know, three people that are there are experiencing, yeah. You know, something, but.
Yeah, no, for it's sure.
Also, you know, just like, hey, this is what we're doing. And just, I don't know.
We realize that sometimes, but sometimes we're a little hasty.
Of course.
You know, you're going, fuck, we suck. Because you're on the road. You start, you know. It's a little depressing sometimes. You know, you don't see your. It's like fucking going to summer camp or something. You don't see your whole family for, you know, whatever, for however long you're at summer camp. And, you know, I remember that as a kid. You know, you get, when you're unattached like that, it gets a little sad, you know.
Right. So yeah, showing up and
then you're like, fuck, you're already 3 weeks into the tour, 4 weeks, and you want to go home, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
Because for me, I'd go through the motions of the road, you know. I couldn't wait to go on the road, you know. And then 2 weeks into it, I'm like, fuck, this is kind of, I want to go home for at least a day or two, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out you're being kind of a puss, you know. And then let's hammer out 2 more weeks, and then you don't want to go home. Because it's going to be different than where you're at, and nobody understands you at home. Your wife, your girlfriend, your friends. You know, you could talk yourself blue about road stories, and nobody wants to hear it. You know, unless you have another musician buddy. You know,
yeah.
And I had a lot of musician buddies like that. We just talk about, you know, which is cool now because I talk to a lot of the old guys still. I mean, most of the band, all the guys are my friends still, but I got a couple. There's a couple ex-members that I'm talking to again, and then we talk about old times, and it's the raddest thing ever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because they're the only people in the world that were there and you know and know about it, you know, and
right,
and could understand it and laugh about it and have the same feeling I do every time I talk about it, when nobody wanted to hear it when I was coming home from the road, you know, couldn't wait to tell people about the cool shit I seen and did, how big the venue, how many people were there, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah.
But nobody really wants to hear it, you know, no. Because they weren't there and, you know, and like, they're really kind of, you know, you start getting disconnected. You're going on their own lives and you start to get disconnected, you know? And, you know, so, well, yeah, that's part of it too. And then you get to fuck, who cares? And let's, you know, this is, I'm doing this for me anyway. Why am I doing this for everybody else? You know?
Right.
You know, so, but, you know, I think that's a natural considerate thing that some people have that kind of keeps you back a little bit, you know? Until I met Jay, which is my new girlfriend. She owns Strata Tattoo in Yucca Valley. And I like hearing how her day went because it's artistic, you know?
Right.
So it's awesome. I get to hear, you know, I mean, it's always some bullshit with, you know, with owning a business, you know, which I'm like, to me, I'm like, oh, fuck, let's fix it. You know, what's the problem with it like that? Anyway, my point is I don't mind hearing her stories. So this is the first time ever I can like, I listen to it and go, oh, that's fucking cool. That big piece you did, or like, that's fucking cool. You know, like it's artistic, you know? So yeah. I guess that's what I'm interested in. You know what I mean?
That's self-rad.
So yeah. So.
I mean, that's a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's kind of like, I know.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of what you're saying is inspiring for, like, my kid is 13. She's now starting to get interested in wanting to learn an instrument.
Yeah.
And I'm like, somebody that's just learning, you could start a band, and if you practice hard enough, mm-hmm. you can go on tour and see, you know, the world if you want. You know, you just, it's all about, but two notes. It starts with, you know, mm-hmm. 2-3 notes and just making songs out of them because you can.
Yeah. You know, and you know, the thing is with that is, you know, music business and music, you know, like I said before, we were DIY doing through a magazine and, you know, and now it's different, you know, social media and all that. And there's no more record labels throwing you money to go on tour and any of that, you know, like it's a different animal. My generation caught the last death rattle of it, how the music business used to be.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Now it's a totally different animal.
Absolutely.
So being the old man I am, I go through, you know, you go through the motions of life and you realize this new, you know, this new way of doing things. And you know, for a lot of years, you're like, fuck this, you know, this is bullshit. It's not like the old ways, but, you know, I tend to stay pretty current. I like new music and, you know, and you know, I like the way things are going now. I think with social media and all that, you know, and pumping your band through that, you know, I mean, pretty cool. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not how it used to be, you know, through snail mail and all, you know, and like, you know, and a payphone, right? You know,
everything's instant now.
You know, you're pretty connected, but it's pretty interesting. But I think I want to say, I might be wrong, but I want to say it weeds out a lot of crap. I think because you can see what you got, you know. And I think what really what makes it now is if you're really, really killer, you know.
Of course.
You know, or unique. Or, right? You know, I think that's.
I think uniqueness is almost more important than being killer.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Oh, for sure.
Be yourself first.
Right, for sure. Like I said, like the way I translated drums in Voodoo Glow Schools. Right. You know, exactly. I didn't know what I was doing. I just made it up myself as I went along. Mm-hmm. So I think if you can grasp that now and then people see that, that's another way of like getting, you know, getting popular. And I'm not talking about being filthy rich popular. I'm talking about people coming out to see your shit because it's exciting. You know?
Right. Like you said, you're going to have a day job. Like music's not going to pay the bills.
Yeah. No, not anymore.
No.
I don't know how you get. I know I've heard of people getting paid through, you know, social media, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how that works. You know? Right. I don't know how you get a check sent to your house because, you know, a buttload of people, you know, pay attention. You know, I don't know what that is. Right, but no. But I think it might be just as hard because you really have to stick out and do something unique and, you know.
Yep.
And like I said, reinvent the wheel as much as you can. I think that's always the thing with a lot of people is trying to accomplish that. And
because honestly, nobody's going to do anything different with music. That's what I feel. I feel like we've heard it now. Like. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's all about interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about you're not gonna create a new chord that's like, oh, what did I just hear?
You know?
Now it's gonna be you're gonna create some sort of beat in my ear that makes it like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, for but sure. Yeah. No, for sure. No,
it's
I know.
Just like you said, just it's all about reinventing the wheel and
that's what you strive for. But you know, it's most likely that's not gonna happen. You know,
of course.
But dude, at a certain level. I mean certain level will, you know.
Right.
But it's still going to be, you know, classic rock or classic, you know, classic, whatever. I mean, you know, now it's a different animal, you know, it's like, I like the technology and all that. You know? Yeah, I wish we'd go back to basics sometimes, but I'm having a lot of fun with it. You know,
I know. Like, you can record a demo on your phone.
Yeah,
like,
man.
That blows my mind. I never even thought of that in high
great
school.
Great demos.
Right?
Yeah.
Better 70 demos than the $500 I was paying the studio in the late 90s.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And what's cool is even if it comes out shitty, you know, it might be even better than, like we were talking about earlier, like shitty Misfits sounding record, you know?
Exactly.
Might even sound better than that, you know?
That's what's so crazy. Like,
or shitty bands, or if your band's, you know, doesn't sound like you're recording to come out great, it's kind of popular now, you
right?
know? It's reverted a little bit, you know, but it's fine, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, cool. You know, now I like it. I appreciate it. Shittier the better, you know? It took me years.
Of course, right.
Break out of my heavy metal bubble, you know? Everything had to be fucking slick and, you know, and virtuoso, you know?
You're right, right.
So you appreciate, you know, kind of like
the
lowbrow stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And I started appreciate more lowbrow. I started listening, so... After, you know, I started listening to a lot of Tom Waits after I was Voodoo. I started listening to a lot of Tom Waits,
mm-hmm.
And real lowbrow shit and like fine, you know. So I started driving a cab, you know.
Yeah.
Out of necessity, I need a job, you know.
Of course.
But I could have done that through something else. Nobody has to see me driving a fucking cab, you know. You know, like driving a cab, dude. You know, people love to talk, you know.
Right.
Like, why is he driving a cab? You know, it's like, well, I need a job, assholes. You know.
Yeah.
That was the thing with Voodoo. A lot of people think you're, when the band's like getting a little popular, people think you're rich, you know, they think you're loaded, you know, it's like, no, you're like, if I'm on the road, I'm not making any money, you know,
right.
I get a cool check once in a while, but it's, you know,
it's gone
with the money I owed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that was spent, you know, a month ago. This is bailing me out, right? I totally, I think that's a common misconception of what being a musician or working musician is like.
For sure.
I played with guys who are like, dude, I don't need a job. I'm in a band. I'm like, we made $50 in tips last week. Like, get a job, man.
Like, dude, you're not. I know you love that piss, that pot to piss in, but
right, like, we gotta live.
Dude. You know, music takes you a long way, but eventually, you know, it's like, you know, it's nice to have some money once in a while. You know,
of course.
Which still isn't a huge, huge priority in my life, really. You know what I mean? I'd like a thrift store, you know, for $2 or something, you know, a record I found, you know. Yeah. I would lose that, you know. Yeah. Just like I lost touch with the old ways, you know, how with social media now, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the same thing with being rich, you know. It's like you would lose all that, you know. So I still keep humble that way. And So I drove the cab for 8 years and I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, I didn't care what people thought, you know, like, you know, the fuck's he driving, you know, it's like, dude, it was amazing because I got the best stories I've ever, you know, and I would play my Tom Waits in the cab and, you know, and drive my shift, you know, and lurk around 4 or 5 o'clock morning in some shitty neighborhood, you know, some scary neighborhood, you know, stuff like that, you know. I got what I wanted and it was awesome. You know, it's another fun job to me. You know?
Right.
And I'd miss rock and roll life. You know, I'd miss it, you know, but like I said, I didn't touch my instrument for 5 years. Hmm. I didn't touch my drums for 5 years at all. I just didn't, you know, I took the cab. Cab was a new instrument, you know, not making a lot of money again, you know,
true.
Feast or famine. But still loved it. So I gathered.
I think that it's important though. Like, worry about doing what you love.
You know?
Like, life is too short.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Don't be sticking around because it pays the bills.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah. No, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So I got to do another a glamorous job, but a fun job, you know? And I was listening, like I said, I was listening to the real kind of just lowbrow and just dark shit, you know? And a lot of songs, a lot of feelings, and driving the cab, you know, it's like no. There's a separation thing with the anxiety thing with not being abandoned, all that. It took me years to let that go. You know what I mean? It took me years. I just barely got to normal. You know, like I missed that. You know, I said, you know, 5 years go by, 10 years go by, and like fuck, I need to start playing again. You know, and cab business goes to shit.
Yeah,
goes to shit. No longer a cab driver. You know.
Now, was that when you started? Decided to start trying to play music again, or were you?
Yeah. No, a couple years before that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I was doing gigs and loading my cab.
Oh, really?
Because it was the only car I had at the time. Yeah, but I was playing so much in lease, you know, and I could just take the car anywhere, you know.
Right.
I didn't need to buy a car. I'm not going to buy a car. I'm not going to spend money on any car or insurance or anything because. Yeah. I don't need two cars, you know.
Right.
I got this car and I take it everywhere, you know. It's a hoopty, you know. I'm not the guy that's gonna have a car to impress a girl, you know. And you know,
right.
I had a couple girlfriends through that time and they didn't care, you know. I know how to pick them, you know. You know what I'm saying?
No, but that's
you know.
And so, but yeah. I mean, why would you buy another car if you were if you already had a primary vehicle?
Yeah, it was great. So I'd you know. Made some money, made some good money sometimes. There's a lot of eating shit still. As a lot of cab drivers might know. But I, you know, what I got out of it was life experience, which is amazing. I wouldn't change for the world. And I collected a good handful of stories that I have not yet to put together, but it's pretty much there for me to put into book form. If you look at my early Instagram photos, there's stories about certain cab rides, and I collected about 50 of them, 50 or 60 of them that I'm going to put into a little book. You know, one's going to be because I took a photo. It was a selfie with me and the passenger and the story and their story. So one side's going to be a selfie with when you open the book, it's going to be one page selfie, one page short story. You know.
Dude, that would be so interesting.
Yeah, so I, you know, if you look around the room, like, you know, I have all this memorabilia, voodoo memorabilia,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So I've been busy with that for the last couple of years and just putting it together so I don't die with it underneath the couch or something. You know what I mean? Right. I just want to up, you know, and then, you know, and for me to enjoy it, for, you know, for and all my friends to enjoy stuff like that. So
I see I'm looking at the poster with Sublime and Voodoo Glow Skulls.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear the story behind that one.
Yeah, that's a gnarly one. You know, I just framed that thing. I had it sitting like a because these are screen printed, you know, pop posters, and if you fold them, they crease really bad. So I've held on to this thing, a lot of these underneath a couch, so they wouldn't, so I wouldn't roll them up because I lived in a small place for a long time. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where am I going to put all this shit? You know, it's going to be under the bed. It's going to be underneath the couch. So that's, I just framed that recently. And that is the last, that's the show that didn't happen with Sublime, Voodoo Glow Skulls Sublime. We drove from San Diego to San Francisco to play. It was American Music Hall. I think that's what the poster says. We get there and Bradley dies. He didn't die at the venue. He died the night before.
And there's no way to reach you, in the, you know, back in the early 90s. They're like, hey, the show's off.
Right.
Like, that would have been instant now. But like,
well, yeah, good point. Like, yeah,
don't
drive
up.
But drove. That's a long-ass drive.
Ass drive for a show that didn't happen.
Get to the show. Most of us didn't get out of the van. And my friend Kevin shows up. He's there early. And he's like, waiting for us. And he's like, dude, fucking Bradley just died. Show's canceled. You know, we're like, fuck, you know, like, you know, that's fucking nuts. You know, like, this is okay. What do we do? I mean, you get back in the van and go right. Just go home. You know, that's it. Turn around, go back home, go back to Riverside,
man,
you know, Riverside, California, San Diego, California to San Francisco to back to Riverside, all in one drive. Pretty much, you know.
Oh,
let's go
God.
Home. That's it. What else are you gonna do? You know, you're not gonna stay the night. You're not gonna hang out with friends. You're fucking depressed. You know.
Yeah,
it's a bummer. You know,
right? Have you guys been into Sublime at that point?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
We were playing a lot of shows with Sublime around that time.
Oh really?
And it's right before they were starting to blow. We were playing big shows. We were playing the Palace with them in L.A. You know, the big venues in San Francisco. Orange County earlier on and smaller places. Yeah, we were in the same scene, you know. Not a lot, not a huge, but a handful of shows, maybe like 10 shows or so with them.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but back in the day, you know, it's this cool band, you know.
Right.
This I realized how great they were when I because there was nights where they were completely just terrible because of Bradley, you know.
Of course.
Like, he was just fucked up, you know. And I heard stories where they would show up to the venue and they were too fucked up and they just wouldn't even go in, you know, just you know, doing whatever they were doing. So it wasn't really consistent, but I seen them play the barn, watched them play the barn in Riverside, which is this great place. It was an indoor place, all ages place. It was at the college and bigger bands would play there. Korn played there. Rise Against the Machine played there for $5. You know, like stuff like that.
At UCR,
yeah. Mm-hmm. UCR Barn.
Oh yeah. My God, I know exactly what you. I just didn't realize they played there.
Yeah, yeah, they had this great, you know, just killer shows, and we ruled it. You know, it was our spot. You know, we played two nights, and it was awesome. But I think this show I'm talking about, I believe it was Korn and us. Yeah, I have a flyer somewhere. I forgot who it was, but Sublime played the patio. So with a stripped down PA, just barely enough mics for the vocals, and it's best I ever seen them play. It was like they were playing a backyard party in their element, you know, not playing big venues.
Yeah,
you know, that was it, you know. And then he didn't die. He didn't live too much longer after that. Those days. You know, the rest is history. You know, the record came out and blew up. You know, so right before they blew up, we were playing a lot. You know, obviously we were going to play that show in San Francisco. And that was the time they were on Live 105. And they were starting to play on the radio a little bit, and it was taking off. So yeah, that's the poster for that. I just barely got it framed, and it made it all these years without getting creased or anything. I think
it's in perfect condition.
I think there's like a little smudge on top, which just gives the character, I guess. But
it does.
You know, that's one of my pride and joys right there.
But there's so many on like these walls. Like as soon as I walked in, I was like, "This is incredible." I mean, I'm looking at Misfits flyers and with the Clone Skulls and Sam Hain and
What's cool? That's a cool thing. That was an awesome thing. Is, you know, after playing bigger theaters and bigger clubs, you started playing festivals. You know, here's the infamous European festivals. You know, flying to Japan and, you know, all that good touring. You know, we toured for the better part of we hit it hard for like 18 years.
Oh, like, that is a pretty long time. Yeah,
just pretty much on the road like 7 months out of the year. For a good 10 years, we're on the road for like 7 months out of the year, just about. Yeah. So that's a lot. That's pretty burnout, you know.
Yeah.
And we're playing festivals, so that's the cool thing. You start playing with huge bands, that classic big rock bands and punk bands and all these bands that you grew up on, you're influenced by, you've never seen, but you're playing on the same show with them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a cool part of the history of the band, you know, with any band that starts to climb and do well for themselves, or however you want to say it, they made it or whatever, you know. Was playing with a lot of cool bands, you know. Because I mentioned earlier that, you know, there was never really coattail riding, you know, so we coattail riding with the band, and we play, we got our own crowd, you know. But then, you know, you're kind of not forced into it, you know, you're a certain level, and the label gets you on your big agent now. Gets you on these huge shows and festivals, you know. So you've already proved yourself, you know.
Yeah.
The rest is fun, you know. It's like there's no backlash of saying you guys coattail right at the top, you know, type thing, you know. So, you know, all that good shit. So it was really gratifying the way the band played out, you know, and it continues to play, you know, and it's hardworking still, you know, without me, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, all the guys are still my friends, and I foresee, you know.
Well, you're in a band with Eddie's Chill.
Yeah, I'm a band with Eddie, guitar player Voodoo, called Emily and the Blackouts. Emily and the Blackouts is a punk rock and roll.
Yeah.
Bar band, not an all ages type band. But we hope to play more, you know, shows. Yeah. But if you were to introduce the band to the world, it'd sound like a bar band or something, you know, hard, you know, like a, you know, the pseudo shitholes of the world band that would play at all those places, you know. But hey, we're gonna play anywhere we can, and so that's the new band, and I'm pretty excited about that, playing again and all that good shit, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though we're not as busy as we should be, but we've been working on this record for like 3 years, you know, and just taking our time because of the convenience of having a studio in your own backyard, you know. You really, because back in the day, we'd bang out 16, 17 songs in 3 days, mixed, you know.
Yeah, right.
Because of cost.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and then when you're younger, you just want to get it out there as quick as you can, you know, and like, let's do it, you know. Now that we have a studio, you know, that sounds amazing now. You know, it sounds so good now. Eddie's really put his money and his time into making it and learning the studio the way I'm super impressed, and it just sounds so fat now. But with the studio there and you know, everybody have, with this being a weekend warrior band, you know, everybody has their thing going on,
of course,
you know? But you know, the record's good, you know. Yeah. The record's, we're just finishing it now,
and I can't wait
to
hear it.
Get it mastered. It's ready to go to mastering, and it's really good. It's 9 songs, and it's just how I felt when I'm excited about it. I listen to it back to back every day.
Yeah.
Until it gets old and we have to write a new batch of songs. You know?
Yep.
Right. But I'm excited about it, and we're just finishing it up, and we'll see what happens. You know, like I said, we're Weekend Warriors. It's not going to be at all how it used to be, mm-hmm. but if we can play some cool shows, right, maybe do a couple tours a year, I'd be totally stoked, you know.
Yeah.
But you can't control the stuff that might get, you know, whatever gets, you know, whatever gets
right,
you know, noticed and people latch onto it. You never know. Yep. You know, stranger things happen.
Right. Exactly.
Twice in my life. You know. You know? Yeah. So, yeah. So you know, but I'm not banking any of that. I just want to have fun again. And that's awesome, me bro. taking 5 years off. You know. I'm burned out and it's kind of bullshit. You know. In reality, you know, I should have just like kept on playing and you know and then. Hone my craft and learn other kinds of music and you know and like but you know it's but like I when you're playing every night
getting,
and,
yeah I understand getting burnt out
and then like, you're like you know and that's then being a little bit lazy you know and then you know and then you know and then you just you get over that you know like, right. Fuck this you know let's start it again you know like I said I'm not playing as much as I used to but still I'm you know it's slowly becoming that way I'm having fun with it and I got a couple little side projects I do but you know, not like what's going head first with this band now, Emily and the Blackouts, which is
that's awesome.
Where I'm at now with music again, you know, and it's fun. It's how it used
is
to be. You
a
know?
Lot of fun.
You know, and there was never really pressure with being in Voodoo, you know, with shows and like that. I mean, when you start getting, you know, there is a little pressure when you start getting signed and there's nobody at the show, you know, when they, mm-hmm. you know, you're on a record label and there's nobody at the show, whatever that. There's a little pressure, you get bummed out, but still, I still get that. I got that. I still got that. I still have that feel from I still get that. I still have that feel from my early days of playing the music.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But now knowing how to play a lot better, and I think for a lot of musicians, when you back off of something, you come back a little stronger, a little. I think it's fresh again. You know, so you have fun with it, and you. And you start fixing your mistakes, you know, and of what you know of how you know the way you play your technique, whatever you know, and you know you already know what you were doing wrong or whatever you know you thought was wrong, you know, because you know for the most part it probably isn't, you know, you listen to back stuff back and it's actually pretty fucking good, you know,
yeah,
like, fuck, that was good, you know,
yeah,
after
no,
not
of
listening,
course.
'Cause I just started listening to like my whole Voodoo catalog, you know, of all the songs I played on, and and I'm fucking after because. My big thing is when I listen to the records so much in the beginning, like I said, I've been listening to the Emily mixes and to where I don't listen to it anymore. I don't listen to it for a couple years, you know?
Yeah.
And Voodoo's case, I didn't listen to it for like 10 years and I just started listening to it again. And it's fucking awesome.
It is.
Yeah. It's better than I thought. I remember it being because you're your own critic when you're recording those songs and writing them, you know, and you're going, you know, what was I thinking? These are really good, you know?
Right. And so, it's good to be able to recognize
and you don't,
that.
You know, yeah. Now you don't. It's just a nostalgia thing. You're like, and the thing is, like, you kind of care what people think about too. In the beginning, you're like,
of course,
you know, you're like, oh man, well, people are gonna like it, you know, or, you know, is this right? I'm like, what am I doing? Do I know how to even play this instrument? You know.
Yep.
And, but then years go by and you go, fuck, that was, you know, okay, I was wrong. You know.
Right. It's great that you're able to look back and see that because it is.
Can I play the songs now? Yeah, I take another 6 months of learning my instrument again for that. For sure. You know, a lot of workout. That's a hard band to be in. It's fast and it's, you know, and it plays, songs are played back to back to back to back to back for not 30 minutes like the Ramones or something, whatever. You know, it's fucking an hour and 15 minutes. You know?
Speaking of Ramones, I'm also looking at a picture of Joey Ramone in a Voodoo Glow Skull shirt.
Yeah,
which
that's kind of Joey, man.
That's amazing.
You can say. I mean, not a lot of people can say. And this, I mean, this world's huge. I mean, this is like, you know, there's a handful of people can say that Joey Ramone wear your
very small
your band shirt.
Right.
So, you know, it's I have this 8x10 that I pulled off the internet, and Joey Ramone had come to a show. He was managing a band called The Independents, and he came to a show to play with Shonen Knife, the Japanese band Shonen Knife. And he did a couple Ramone songs with them. Independents jumped on stage, and while he was at the show, that we were headlining, he our merch guy Rodrigo Torres gave him a t-shirt, and who knows, he knew he was gonna wear it, you know,
right?
But to me, that just shows how cool the guy was, you know what I mean?
For
you know?
Real,
maybe, you know, like, you know, who cares? I'm wearing this cool shirt, and so I pulled it off the internet, and I finally put in an 8x10, and it's Joey Ramone wearing a Voodoo Glow Skulls t-shirt. So that's like my, come on, I can die now. You know, you know, pretty cool. That's, no, that's where the buck stops, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, pretty cool, man. If he, whether he's a fan or not, or he even heard the band at all, is I don't know. You know, but
I don't think it would make it any less cool though, because he's still wearing the shirt because he saw a DIY punk band doing what they exactly created.
I want to. I'd like to think that exactly what happened, and I think it's exactly what happened.
And so I just think him wearing it at all is amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool, man. So like along with my collection of posters, like that's one of the things I just put together so people could enjoy it as well as myself.
Yeah.
So I'll come back here, I'll smoke my joint.
Yeah.
And you know, and just check out the cool shit, you know.
Right.
So what I have up now is just, you know, like that's a good one right here, actually, that L7 with Green Day at Gilman Street. Oh. Yeah.
May 5th.
Yeah. I don't remember.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we opened up that whole show. So, you know, hey, you know, I'm starting to break stuff like that so I can enjoy it. And you know, when you get older too, is you start giving stuff away, you know. So I have a lot of stuff I've been like giving friends. Hey, come on. I'll frame it and like,
oh man, that's so cool.
Something cool, you know. So you know, it's like, where's my shit gonna go? Where's my shit gonna go when I die? You know, it's like, it's funny because I just started hitting estate sales. You know, the last couple of years, I go a lot. You know, and it's pretty morbid. You know, it's pretty grim. You know, you walk in there and it's like, for the most part, it's people's shit that that passed away. And you're going, fuck, people are just taking your shit for $1, $2. You know, you're like, fuck. It's like, what's going to happen to my cool shit, you know? And because I don't have any kids or anything like that. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to die anytime soon. And nobody knows, but I'm just saying.
No, it's totally true. I actually.
Dude, where's my shit going to go? You know, that's why I started framing stuff. Like, where is it going to go? Like, you know, who's going to treat it right if it's underneath the couch? I'm going to frame it for the most part, you know?
Yep.
And you know, now I have a place, and you know, and then I can, you know, enjoy it for the most part. And my girlfriend Jay loves it. You know, she's totally into it. She, you know, she's super supportive about it. She's a musician also.
That's so cool.
And so, you know,
again, another key to a healthy relationship. I'm taking notes for myself, Jerry. I'm glad you look so happy.
Yeah, pretty dope. But yeah, you know, she knows how to play music. She hates playing with me though. She says it's like playing with a mean bus driver. You know, like, right? And I'm not that way at all. I just think if you don't play, you can't keep up. You're like, come on, man. I don't notice me doing that, you know.
Yeah,
I guess I am, you know. So.
All right. I'm not going to take up any more of your time.
No, this has been awesome.
I can't thank you enough for doing this. Like, this is so cool.
Thank you, Cassidy.
This was everything I was hoping it would be.
Oh, cool. So. I know that I didn't know you drove from Pomona. I thought you drove from Riverside.
No.
It was totally worth it. It's quite a trek.
It was totally worth it.
Oh, cool, man.
So
awesome.
I appreciate it. And
thank you so much.
Yeah. So Jerry and Cassidy are signing out.
Why you always act this way? Hey, love when you act crazy. Drink a whiskey till the next day. Oh, baby, you're so pretty. You don't have to play this game. Hey, love when you act crazy. Eating pills to make it go away. And they cry in the dark just a little bit inside, cause they hate the way you bring the soul alive. Hate the shit that you do. Can't stand the way they wanna be you. Crazy girl, too much fire for this world. Yeah, I'm a crazy girl. I'm about to lose control. So don't, baby, you're so pretty. You're just digging your own grave. In love when you act crazy, right? mean you. Think the shit that you do can't hide the way they wanna mean you. Crazy girl, but with no control. Can't hold me down. Can't make me stay around. Can't make me stay around. Can't make me stay around. Can't make me stick around. Baby, my life's so ugly. Don't wonder I got this way. But my life to where I stand today. Not sure if I wanna stay.